This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 69 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens. ANC got its start about 20 years ago as a rotational signage company that primarily serviced the pro sports business. And through the years, ANC has grown into a big tech services provider that's been putting in the visual systems for many arenas and stadiums. If you see a big center-hung set of LED boards over an NBA or Division I basketball court, or a giant replay board at a ballpark, there's a decent chance ANC is behind it. More recently, the company has found itself getting into digital out-of-home media, creating the same kinds of visual spectacle you might see in live sports, but instead in public areas or mass transportation hubs. A lot more than a conventional AV systems integrator, ANC is doing a ton of R&D and using product that will do things like light up the whole 360-degree view of an area with synced content. You might think, well, that's not all that new, but ANC's CTO Mark Strauss explains why what he's cooked up is different. I spoke with Strauss recently about the idea of taking the spectacle and energy of live events into this new kind of arena of public squares and rail stations, and how he's constantly trying to push possibilities.
Thank you, Dave. You know, what is interesting is that ANC started with its primary DNA all in sports, and today our DNA now is spread pretty equally between sports and out of home. Now, our love is in both because they necessitate a whole bunch of different skill sets. And for me, the challenge is that I'm responsible and tasked for making those different skill sets work professionally and being a stakeholder in the success of our teams and also our public installations means you are wearing a lot of different hats.
Mm-hmm. Did you just kind of fall into out of home, or was this a strategic plan?
We knew going into sports originally that sports was a finite amount of markets, but we also felt we had to become competent and really good at what we did before we branched out. So it was absolutely premeditated that we were going to branch out. How spectacular we branched out was unexpected.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a general thing in the sports and entertainment market, in that for the longest time, I've been around a whole bunch of years, you would have sports and entertainment facilities that would maybe have a sign on the side of it. And you go inside and that's when the spectacle begins. But now you have areas like LA Live, and where I am in Toronto, there's a public square area immediately around the Air Canada Center. And I suspect this is the case in a lot of cities now, where the spectacle with technology really starts, you know, in a fairly substantial radius around the actual building.
Yes. You know, what you're describing is what I see is the continuation of really the dream of what we saw in Minority Report, the idea that the customer being us, walking around in public spaces, will have their identity and signs and sponsorship follow with them. Also, that will be an attempt to keep the signs relevant so the eyeballs keep looking at the signs. So at the end of the day, what really is important about what we're working on right now, and I think this is in digital signage as a whole, is keeping freshness, keeping the content relevant. And if it isn't, no one will watch it. And that is because, unfortunately, due to smartphones and all the proliferation of smart devices, you know, when we talk about this cliche now, our eyeballs are taxed, they're looking at a lot of things. But the truth is, and you know, cliches are built on real fact, that is the case, and we have to solve for it. And so my perception is that as long as we're chasing the eyeball, we're going to find different ways to advertise to that eyeball, and we'll find different places to do it. And we're going to continue to expand. If I may just take you a little bit back, Dave,
sure.
We started in 1997 as a rotational sign company. And then by 2K, we were completely evolving into a digital display company, and we did a 360. And I looked at Jerry, our founder, and said, yep, wow, this is dramatic. I doubt they're ever going to put any more video boards than this, than a center hung in a 360 into a building. Look how this eye candy is taking your eyes away from the game.
Mm-hmm.
And was I wrong? I mean, look where we are today.
Yeah.
We have so many boards in a public space that it's hard not to see the digital signage. The sporting event is enhanced, and it has become so commonplace that we don't even realize that there was a time just 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where you'd see concrete, and the only thing you'd be really able to focus on was the players and an occasional replay on the video board.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really blown away at the proliferation, but no longer surprised because I've been living it for so long.
Right. One of the things, certainly in the context of out of home, is it is being regarded, particularly as digital has started to take hold within out of home, that it's a glance medium, that you have to produce content that people are only going to glance at, and then they're going to be looking somewhere else. And certainly the way Times Square is built up, it's a kaleidoscope of things to glance at. But it sounds and seems like what you're doing and where you're suggesting things are going is that a venue or an area is really best when it's programmed, when it's all synchronized, and there's a whole thought to what's going on, and you do have an audience as opposed to people who might actually happen to look up briefly from their smartphones.
The revenue proves the point.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a coordinated symphony of information, and you are actually aware of burnout, that the audience doesn't want to see a cacophony of chaos, that they have to then distinguish each individual sign. What they're really looking for is something to actually be able to think about. And I know this is a concept that most of us don't really think about, but what really makes a brain a little bit hazy is to throw a whole bunch of content. It's like going down the grocery aisle and being overloaded by all the different varieties of cereal, for mm-hmm. example.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to actually focus on all those boxes. So if you really want to make the advertising worth more money, then you got to make it and put it into situations that shed clarity to your brand or to the message that you're trying to depict. So I think it's super important, Dave, that we really think about these things as part of the design, because I think if you do that, and at least from our experience, our clients make a lot of money because instantly their signs become worth more.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been a technological reason why this hasn't really taken root, the idea of the synchronicity, but ANC decided to solve that. And, you know, in around 2014, when we were solving for this, what really occurred was that we were solving it for not just one problem, but realizing all content, including everything in sports, was going to have to get more fresh, because we were losing eyeballs to media conduits that suddenly just popped up.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere. People today are so distracted in what they're looking at that to solve these issues was, I think, paramount to the success of not just ANC, but to everyone in the digital market. So I think if you tell stories, people will actually go beyond just peering. They will actually go and look at the board and go, okay, what is this trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you increase dwell time. I think if you don't have a story, you're then going back to the problem you depicted at the very beginning of this. I don't think that's the solution.
Right. So one of the reasons we're talking is your PR people and marketing people reached out to me and said, you guys have a new product called Live Sync, and the idea that you can synchronize screens down to the frame across a large venue and effectively have a domination campaign of some kind. My pushback was, I don't think that's all that new. I've seen lots of software platforms that have some sort of a syncing server that syncs up all the players, so it's playing the same piece of content at the same time. Pushback to me was, this is different. So explain to me how this is different.
I like challenging preambles to my answer. Thank you. We are different. First of all, most of the systems out there can frame sync the first time they are given the task to sync, but then they drift.
Okay.
Most systems can't coordinate multiple sequences in and out of web content, dissolve web content, pre-cache it so there's no dark spaces, and come in and out of the different sequences like we can. Mm-hmm. When we say frame sync, we mean that at any given time, you can take screens offline in our venues, service them, and they return into synchronicity.
Okay.
These are things we know our competitors can't do. We do redundancy at one-to-one, meaning, for example, the Miami Heat, you could trip over a cable of any server that is online. You will never see a glitch on the board because our redundancy is perfect, seamless. Mm-hmm. You might see a pop in the matrix switch every 100th of a time, if you follow my point. This is precision that I have not seen in Times Square. That is why in Times Square, you see blue screens of death. You see a lot of screens that have seized and paused. They do exactly the same thing we do. We do it at a scale of military precision because our clients expect us to be always up.
Right.
Sports venues have a precision that other venues don't have. And therefore, we are bringing that precision to everything we do. And it allows and affords venues like the World Trade Center to really be proud. And Westfield and our other clients to be proud of the fact that those signs will stay running.
Right.
And it is not good enough, in my opinion, to say I have a feature that's cool. What's important is that feature goes end to end, meaning will you resync if one of your renderers goes offline? How are you going to bring the whole system back online? How long does it take for your redundancy to kick in? And what I want you to understand, Dave, is we have prided ourselves on doing this at a very high level of precision. Mm-hmm. Like a Swiss clock.
Right. So this only works, though, if I'm understanding this correctly, in a venue where all of the servers are running your software. You can't run across different CMSs, platform servers, and so on. So I get what you're saying. I wonder about something like a Times Square or other out-of-home areas.
Let me tell you what we're doing for that application.
Sure.
When we were given the mission to start looking at the Oculus World Trade Center, and then I also had Fulton Train Station right next door, which was really very interesting because it allowed us to build two control systems, and it also allowed us to experiment with the bridging of both of them. And what we are now working on is called the Citadel, and the Citadel is our cloud-based bridge that allows us now to create local networks between any of our deployments and then on a global basis, tie them all together into a synchronized whole. So Dave, we are trying to solve not just for the local, but also for global. And this all started with realizing Westfield was global.
Right. But what happens if in a venue or an area where you have multiple media companies running multiple systems? And I know that sometimes they try to coordinate or they do a buy across multiple media
Let me explain
owners.
To you what we're solving
so
for.
Could you do that?
Yes, okay. In a better way than most, not okay. Perfectly.
Right.
So the reason being is by being able to create with the Citadel a point-to-point network across multiple servers, it allows you to take all the servers in Times Square and put them into one local network. We can do that pretty flawlessly. Now, once you've got people into a local network, you can spawn them. Now, our issue right now is, and we're going to solve for this eventually, is we're a PC-based house. So we can do this on the PCs effortlessly. Now, if we were to bring in Macs, we'd have to create a Mac Fortress client, and that's one application away. Mm-hmm. But once we have done that next piece of engineering, which is on the agenda, we literally will be able to create a local network between everyone. Therefore, all the triggers in the local network will be the speed of the combined network latency. When you can do something like that, and since we now control all of the machines locally, at least you can get your triggers as close as humanly possible to each other's software and then create this unifying experience. It will never be as good as controlling sync or harnessing it from the inside, keeping it in your own platform. But definitely, Dave, I'm trying to solve for bringing in multiple systems. We've been doing this in sports for years, you know, bringing in different switchers and different companies. And in the canvas of out of home, I want to really solve for this because I believe we're going to be looking at creating larger geographic areas of entertainment, you know, space, and they're going to require 20 or 30 different technologies all to coexist.
Right.
So from my perspective, we're trying to solve for our issues, which is, wouldn't it be cool if you could create an instantaneous network between all those systems, be them on Wi-Fi or whatever they're on, and you join them up instantly. And so, Dave, that's our first major step. It is PC-based now, but as we expand this, it will get onto Mac.
Right. It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
What you're talking about programming an area and having these sorts of quote-unquote domination campaigns and dominant content is kind of counter to what I also hear in the out-of-home space, that more and more and more of the inventory that's being planned into out-of-home displays is programmatic. And programmatic doesn't seem like something that, you know, is going to play well with your notion of how these spaces should look.
I actually, on that notion, Dave, I disagree with that.
Okay.
I actually think we actually have a much superior platform for programmatic content. I have to be careful there. Sometimes that's a tongue twister. And to make sure that we can do that, we created what's called a sequencer, a multi-channel sequencer that allows us to create multiple channels. And now we are bringing in NDI, which will be one of our native streaming formats. We're also going to support SMPTE and other formats. But with this, we're creating a bi-directional streaming capability to allow us to instantly affect. The stream will give us information on what's going on with our client. And as soon as we know what's going on with our client, we'll be able to affect the transmission. If you have a localized network that is actually behind the scrutiny of your ISP, they can't snoop in because this is a VPN localized network. You are more secure. You control your timings. You see all your hard drives. You're actually in control of your destiny. It allows those local programs to be distributed much more efficiently over the long haul. Mm-hmm. Now, in today's world, we might not be looking at the bi-directional streams. They're coming, Dave. The last thing I want to see happen on one of my networks is some bad actor, you know, come in and mess with me. So I want you to realize that I would argue if you don't put in the first tier of security when you're trying to create this wide area network, you're vulnerable because Right. We're using ports today, and we're using things that other bad actors will know how to exploit. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at this more as solving the security issue. And once I've done that, Dave, I actually have solved for digital signage all the issues because we have instantaneous access to all the signs.
Right.
And with bidirectional feeds, my gosh, that's the holy grail of being able to transact in real time with the sign.
I'm more curious, though, in the context of programmatic, that if you have media planners and increasingly machine learning and AI is doing the planning, they're just looking for avails and a time slot between 3 and 6 in a particular location where I want to inject an ad that may have no relation to the other ads on the other boards and make it more difficult to sort of plan out these sequenced, synchronized kinds of events because this is attempting to do something very different from that.
You know, Dave, the cool thing is that it's a very big world out there and there's a lot of canvases. Mm-hmm. Our system can be interrupted and have those local, you know, digestions of other people's information. We've been doing that forever.
Okay.
So from our perspective, it's more like if your script and the way you want to design your signs is that in the script, you have live material coming in. That's great. But maybe after midnight, you want it to be a robot. Maybe after 6 a.m., you want it to be responding to local events. What is nice is to have a system that can wrap its tentacles around all of these different little systems that you might want to create. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at the problem more as an overall web of services and modules that we create, right, and not just one solution. Because does this make sense that when I go to conventions, I hear people talking about one way to do it? Dave, I think we're going to get to a world now because technology affords us this luxury of being able to do it all. Mm-hmm. So you can have the really cool sequences with the program being interrupted with inside the sequence, if I'm making sense, inside slots.
Yep.
And you can have it all. So I hope that I today have at least convinced you that what's compelling about ANC is that we're skinning the onion a few layers deeper than most. Mm-hmm. We're not looking at this as we're going to create the holy grail of solutions and we can do it all. Absolutely not, Dave. We've just made some big announcements just about what we're doing in video. And we've got multiple partners we're working with right now to do different cool technologies, but we would be arrogant to assume we could do it all ourselves.
Right. There's, you know, you've talked about event programming and how out of home and certainly sports are events and they're creating experiences for people. How do you define experience in the context of something like digital signage and out of home? And how do you know when it's working?
Well, that is, to me, dictated by 3 criterias, and ANC has met all 3.
Okay.
Number 1, does the industry accept that you have achieved a certain stature? And I think when DSC awarded us the GOAT Apex Award for Fulton train station, mm-hmm, and we had done more digital signage in that train station than ever before, I think that was showing that this new capability and this new company on the block of out of home was worthy of being there. The second thing is looking at the revenue and the statistics of, did the signage actually make money? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes, it did. So it will actually meet the revenue projections and the terms of the contracts and the expectation of everyone that was involved in the project. Mm-hmm. And then finally, thirdly, is technologically, is the deployment sustainable, that the standard of the deployment is maintained over multiple years? And if you've been to Fulton train station, yep, I hope you've seen a consistency in the product being maintained. Mm-hmm. And therefore the canvas is being kept whole. These are really important. And I think Fulton, for example, proves that we're getting it right. Mm-hmm. And those are my measures.
The across the street from Fulton at World Trade Center, there's a extraordinarily wide, long digital canvas of fine pitch LED. And your company is driving that, correct?
Yes, it is. Dave, the east-west concourse screen that's at 280 feet, 800 square feet, 3.9 million pixels is our baby. You know, it is an amazing screen and it has a story which really involves everyone in our company. That screen didn't come together by just a few meetings and paying some money to get a video board made. It took years of effort because we were dealing with a very important site.
Yes.
We had to be considerate of not just the site, but that this product, this project in general will work. You cannot get this type of a project wrong. The reverence to the site, I can't even I want everyone to understand, was, well, just say exceptional. I have no other site I've ever worked on that meant as much to me as that site. So when we designed this from the perspective of getting the hardware, the vendors we used, everything had to be chosen and it had to be reliable. And the team that I work with got it right. Every single member of the team understood the gravity of this project. So when it came to moving the pixels, which I personally was responsible for, I not only had to move the pixels, but move the pixels so that every video board in your eyesight, which is all the video boards after that, that goes towards the Freedom One Tower and then on, are all in synchronicity, which you've probably have seen, Dave.
Yep.
And those boards and all of that means that I had to, over multiple servers and multiple geographic locations with these very complicated transportation hubs, and we had to get all that right. And again, that took a team. And some shout outs to my programming team and our head programmer, but he and I, for example, probably did 100 experiments just on the best way for us to compress the files so that way we could move the files between locations and have perfect playback. Every part of this project was pushing the envelope of making sure that not only could we make it work, but we could make it work consistently over a great period of time.
That must be a pretty big ass file when you have a piece of video to send over there.
It is. And the surprising thing is if it was uncompressed, those files are 30 to 40 gigs. And when they're compressed, we get them down to 4 or 5 gigs or less, depending, you know, because compression is so variable. And we use many different compression codecs. This will surprise you. There's not just one. We recommend one because content is exceeding Adobe's limits in their render engine. So therefore, it comes to us in various different stages, Dave. It's really interesting to be creating video canvases that are above the tools that can create them. So some of the challenges are just innate, and it's part of the research and development that ANC is doing. And I hope you appreciate there's lots of integration companies that are doing what we do in general. But there are very few that are actually designing the complete control system. And is in 300 plus venues where we have pushed the envelope and done many firsts, you know, record breaking firsts. And it's really because of research. There is no other way to do it. And just to get that east-west concourse screen was literally, well, I'll put it a different way. There's no white paper to go to. You can't go down the street and go, hey, how did you do that? You're literally on your own. And it's cool. It's nerve-wracking, but I hope that you, with your eyeballs, saw that there was something special about that location, and I hope that you saw the love that our company put into it.
Yeah, I've spoken with other companies who are specialists in big canvases and really think about the creative side of it, and they've said, this is not about pixel pitch. This is not about the tech itself. What really matters is that control system and how you manage these massive canvases. Because if you don't get that right, that it's just a big digital or piece of digital wallpaper.
Absolutely, Dave. You know, I know you're a real expert in this field. and you've seen probably hundreds, if not thousands, of boards. How many times can you say you've seen a truly brilliantly executed campaign as opposed to the times that you say, what a missed opportunity? And I hope I'm not sounding arrogant. I'm actually being truthful about it.
Yep.
I don't understand why clients will spend millions of dollars and not understand that the consistency of what they produce after the date of sale is more important than the sale itself.
Mm-hmm. So last question, because we just kind of dove into this and flew through it. I should have asked this up front, but again, we just kind of started. Could you give me a rundown on what ANC is all about and what all you do? Because you alluded to you being an integrator, but a whole bunch more. You guys are based outside of New York in Purchase, I understand?
Yes, we are. We're based out of Purchase, New York. We also now have facilities in Dallas, Atlanta, and other places.
Okay.
We were founded in 1997 as a full-service rotational signage provider. And then between 1997 to 1999, we turned into a technology company. And that's when I came and started consulting with ANC. We then went on to invent the first contiguous 360-degree video board in professional sports and deployed it.
Where was that?
We did the first one in Ottawa in Canada.
Oh, really? Okay.
At the Ottawa Senators. Mm-hmm. And then we did a smaller one at that time, I think it was the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., which is now the Wells Fargo Center, I think, if I got that one right.
Yeah, they always
change.
And
we also did, Air Canada Center also got a 360.
Okay.
And a few others.
Right.
Sorry, those didn't come right off the lips. But the bottom line is that we invented the 360 and then we continued to push the envelope. And then later, between 2K and 2005 and 6, surface mount LED came out, which mm-hmm. forced us to up our game. And that was a very traumatic moment because we finally had exceeded broadcast resolution, Dave, mm-hmm. which was really traumatic because, mm-hmm. wow, everything, all the codecs, everything was built around the boundaries of the rectangle. And we were brush cutting before, and now we were in the Wild West, and we ended up having to create our new render engine, which is why, Dave, we can now move more pixels. And from there, with the new render engine, we went into our new chapter, doing bigger and bigger boards, like the Dallas Cowboys. Then we went on to do the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then from there, we went in 2014 timeframe, we slipped into Fulton Train Station, and then we did the World Trade Center, and then we started doing other train stations and other areas around the country and out of home. And now we're looking at very intricate and very complicated out-of-home deployments like airports and train stations and public transportation hubs of all varieties. And we're doing the complex stuff with the multiple sequencers and tools that we've had to develop to make all this stuff work.
Right.
So it's been a challenge. It's been really cool. And now ANC's other business model, by the way, is we do marketing. Mm-hmm. We help clients model their return of investment should they buy the signage from us. Mm-hmm. And therefore we integrate with them. We're not just giving them graphics, but trying to help them achieve the very best combination of graphics and pitches to their clients. We also educate our clients in how to market. We can also consult with our clients. And then finally, we have these very deep relationships with multiple LED vendors, including premium vendors like Mitsubishi, which really allow us to go into our different venues and provide the very best solution mm-hmm. with the very best reputation. And these venues really require us to be buttoned up. And so our partnerships, for example, with Mitsubishi are very important. Mitsubishi doesn't partner with just anyone. There's a standard they require of us. And what is nice is we create control systems that they need and they create video boards. And when you put it all together, we've all got flesh in the game. We're all working towards a common goal together.
Right.
So I hope that explains a little bit of mm-hmm. our different DNA. Mm-hmm. Why I said we're not just an integrator.
All right. Very interesting. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you, Dave.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.